Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here, where...
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. We're broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. I am your storytelling host for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour, Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasi Olkowski, the co-host.
Today is Monday, October 14th. Thank you, Stash, for those large numbers. And we're glad you're listening. Our theme today is alter ego. Actually, alter egos, I believe. Right. And in Spanish, that would be alter egos. And you'll hear more about why I'm saying that as we get into the show.
Wow.
So, Stash.
Spanish. But it sounded just like English.
Yes.
With a Spanish accent.
Yeah. So, we're going to talk about what's been happening in the storytelling world, or do you want to go right to the speak series?
No, we could talk about, well, because we were actually away last weekend to the Storytelling Center of the Universe. And
okay.
That's true. 1973, a storytelling event was held in the streets of Jonesboro, Tennessee, in front of the courthouse, and there are varied numbers that people talk about. I've heard as high as 40 and as low as 18 people sitting, listening to stories told by Jimmy Neal Smith and Ray Hicks and a few others. And last weekend, there were probably 10,000 to 11,000 people going through Jonesboro starting on Wednesday night. There was an event. And then on Thursday night, there was an event, and the main storytelling festival started on Friday morning. Starts at 10 in the morning and goes all day long until late at night with ghost stories and a midnight cabaret, which is interesting because it's not done at midnight.
It ends at midnight.
I just thought that was really strange. Come to the midnight cabaret. What time does it begin? 10 o'clock. It's one of those things that people do that just drives a man like me crazy, you know? And then on all day Saturday, there were great stories being told in the five tents, and another evening of ghost stories and events, lots of separate events in the Storytelling Theater at the International Storytelling Center. I'm not always sure about that name, but
that's correct.
I know. I meant I'm sure about using that name, but it makes sense, you know, once you know the details, I guess. And then Sunday, the Sacred Stories, which I always like because they take the place of going to church. And
I wouldn't think that would be a good selling point for you, Stash.
What? Yeah.
Having an event that takes the place of going to church, because it still would be about church.
No, it wasn't about church.
Okay.
All the stories I've ever heard there have not been religious. They have been
sacred.
Spiritual or or sacred in the sense that they talk about the good things that human beings do and stuff. But they don't, you know. In fact, if I ever went to one and it was a religious story, like in church, I would probably get up and leave.
Hmm.
Only because to me that would be
sacrilege.
Yeah, I don't go to church, you know, and don't believe in going to church. I believe in church work, but I don't think it has to be church centered, because there are a lot of people who do work like the churches do, you know, feed the poor, shelter people, and stuff like that. And it, in my mind, it has nothing to do with the religion. It has to do with a group of people being nice and caring about human beings. And you don't have to believe in anything except people to do that.
This would be a good time probably for me to thank Andy Offit Irwin.
Yeah.
For
anything to shut me up, right?
No, I was thinking about good people, and Andy was there on Sunday.
Right.
He was almost the last storyteller that I heard, because after the sacred telling on Sunday morning, there was more kind of wind-up telling in the afternoon, and Andy was the last speaker in the tent I was in.
Great.
So I wanted to thank him for Terry here and giving us permission to use that as our opening for this show.
May I give an illustration of the goodness of people?
Oh, yes, of course.
So my wife and I went to the festival. We've been many times. I've been a dozen times, and I think Terry has probably been 8 or 9. There have been times when I went by myself for different reasons. So we were in the first tent, in the library tent, and Terry was sitting on my right. We were towards the middle, on the right side. And next to Terry was an elderly woman who I would guess was probably close to my age. To her right was her daughter. And Terry was engaged in conversation with the elderly woman and introduced me, and the lady was telling us what they were doing there and why they were there and all. And Terry apparently had been our typical self, being kind and understanding and speaking to a person and listening to them. And just sitting there, the elderly woman talked to her daughter about something sort of like in a secret, and then turned to us and said, "Are you going to the yarn spinner's party?" And we said no. And she said, "Would you like to go?" And I said, "Yeah, but, you know, a lot of money." And she said, "Well, here, we have 2 tickets that we won't be using because we have to leave before that, and you're welcome to them." And I was pretty much flabbergasted, and so was Terry. But apparently the lady thought Terry was so nice. And, you know, since I was tagging along with my wife, I got the benefit of Terry's niceness. And so we were given 2 tickets to the Yarn Spinner's party, which was very wonderful, I thought.
And I think if there was a couple anywhere on the grounds who should get those tickets, it would have been you guys.
Well,
I'm glad you got to go.
I just think there's an example of somebody doing something really nice for strangers, just to be nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? You know, and all over that weekend, I met people that I had seen before and people I'd never seen before who were constantly being nice. I've told people for years now, it's my favorite weekend, and I've never heard an angry or especially a vulgar word, but never heard anger or meanness at all in all the times I've been to Jonesboro. And it's the only place I can honestly say where I can spend 3 days and not hear bad things.
It is a great festival,
yeah,
and a good time, and lots of wonderful people there.
And people go there for a wonderful, good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah,
and I think that starting with that is why it's so well behaved and why you hear so many nice things. So,
I'm going to talk about the Stories in the Round series,
okay,
just to mix things up a
yes,
bit.
Good.
So, Stories in the Round is a monthly, for 10 months, story venue that meets at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown. The address there is 13245 Searfoss Pike, just west of the city limits in Hagerstown, Maryland. And we have 3 sessions left. So October 21st, next Monday, Dovey Thomason will be coming to us. Dovey, if you don't know Dovey, I will tell you that she tells traditional and personal tales. Much of her storytelling derives from her Kiowa, Apache, and Lakota and Scott's ancestors. And she is a fascinating teller. She definitely knows her stuff and is just delightful. She does all kinds of voices and animal voices and entertains as well as shares traditions. And she will be there at 7 p.m. on October 21st, $10 in advance, $12 at the door. Then on November 25th, Mitch Capel will be here. And I've been saying to various funny male storytellers that Mitch Capel is one of the two or three funniest male storytellers in the United States today. And I get a lot of agreement on that, even from people that I would expect maybe to argue with me because they think they are the funniest storytellers. I'm working on a consensus. Anyway, Mitch will be here on November 25th, which is the Monday before Thanksgiving. And then on December 23rd, Fanny Crawford, that's right, yours truly, will be telling at Stories in the Round. If you want more information about any of these storytellers, you can contact me at 301-730-1638, or you can go to my email at fanitsky, F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y, at hotmail.com. That's all I have to say about that.
That was quite a bit.
Yeah.
Not. I was kidding. Anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing Davi again.
Me too.
Yes. And I know she's incredible. And she was at Speak Story Series last year.
Yes. And she was at Stories in the Round 3 years ago. So this is her return visit, and I'm really glad to welcome her back.
That's good. So are you ready with a story?
I am, and I guess I will tell my Spanish language story since I possibly piqued your interest by saying that our theme today is alter egos, Spanish for alter ego. And Sasha, I think you've heard this story before. This is Caperucita Roja, Little Red Riding Hood.
Oh.
Había una vez, once upon a time, en una casa en el bosque, vivía una niña con su madre y su padre. En el bosque, los árboles se proliferan. In a house in the woods, there lives a little girl with her mother and her father. In the forest, the trees are everywhere. La niña siempre se llama Caperucita Roja porque ella tiene una caperuza roja, un regalo de su abuelita quien vive al otro lado del bosque. The little girl calls herself Little Red Riding Hood because she wears a cape with a hood, a gift from her dear grandmother, who lives on the far side of the forest. Un día, la madre dice a la niña, Caperucita Roja, su abuelita está enferma. Toma a su abuelita esta cesta con la sopa, los pasteles y las naranjas. Pero, cuidado, hay un lobo en el bosque. One day, the little girl's mother said, Little Red Riding Hood, your grandmother, your dear grandmother, is ill. Take to your grandmother this basket of soup, pastries, and oranges. But be careful. Hay un lobo en el bosque. There is a wolf in the forest. Mamá, ¿es verdad? Hay un lobo en el bosque. Sí. Cuidado. Mama, is it true? There's a wolf in the woods. Yes, be careful. La niña dice, sí, mamá. Y corre al bosque con la cesta. Yes, mamá, she said, and ran towards the forest with the basket. En el bosque, el lobo está sentado al lado del camino. El lobo dice, ¡ay, tengo hambre! ¡Tengo mucho hambre! In the woods, the wolf was sitting at the side of the road. The wolf said, ¡ay, I'm hungry! ¡I am so hungry! Cuando el lobo ve a la niña, el lobo dice, Buenos días, niña, ¿a dónde va? When the wolf saw the little girl, the wolf said, Hello, good day, little girl, where are you going? La niña dice, Voy a la casa de mi abuelito con esta cesta de comida, la sopa, los pastales y las naranjas. The little girl said, I am going to the house of my grandmother with this basket of food, soup, pastries, and oranges. Ah, el lobo dice, está enferma la abuela. Sí, dice la niña. ¿Dónde vive la abuela? Oh, mi abuelita vive al otro lado del bosque, dice la niña. Ah, sí. Dice el lobo, pues, buenos días, niña. Y la niña va por el camino. The little girl said, I am going to the house of my grandmother with this basket of food, soup, pastries, and oranges. Ah, said the wolf, your grandmother is ill. Sí, yes, said the little girl. Where does your grandmother live? Oh, dear granny lives on the other side of the forest, said the little girl. Oh, yes, said the wolf. Well, good day, little girl. And the little girl went off down the road. El lobo corre por el bosque a la casa de la abuela y llama a la puerta. ¿Quién llama? Contestó la abuela. Soy yo, soy Caperucita Roja. Tengo una cesta de la sopa, los pastales y las naranjas, dice el lobo en la voz de Caperucita Roja. The wolf ran through the forest to the house of the grandmother and he knocked on the door.
Who's there? Asked the grandmother. It is I. It is Little Red Riding Hood. I've brought a basket of soup, pastries, and oranges, said the wolf in the voice of Little Red Riding Hood. The grandmother said, Oh, la abuelita dice, Pasa, pasa, mi niña.
Pues el lobo entra en la casa. La abuelita está acostada en la cama.
Who's there? Asked the grandmother. It is I, Little Red Riding Hood. I've brought you soap, a basket of soup, pastries, and oranges, said the wolf in the voice of Little Red Riding Hood. The grandmother said, come in, my little niña. And the wolf entered the house. The grandmother was lying in bed.
El lobo dice, ¡Ay, tengo hambre, tengo mucho hambre!
¡Ay, ay, dice la abuela! ¡Tengo mucho miedo! ¡Usted es un lobo! Y la abuela corre por el bosco.
The wolf said, Ay, I am very hungry. I am so hungry.
Ay, said the grandmother. I am so afraid. You are a wolf. And the grandmother ran into the woods.
El lobo se acuesta en la cama de la abuela. The wolf got into bed of the grandmother. Caperucita Roja
came to the house, goes to the house. Caperucita Roja va a la casa y llama a la puerta. Abuelita, dice Caperucita Roja. Little Red Riding Hood goes to the house and knocks on the door. Grandmother, says Little Red Riding Hood. ¿Quién llama? Dice el lobo en la voz de la abuela. Who knocks? Says the wolf in the voice of the grandmother. Soy yo, Caperucita Roja, dice la niña. Tengo una cesta de comida con la sopa, los pasteles y las naranjas para usted. It is I, Little Red Riding Hood, says the little girl. I've brought you a basket of food with soup and pastries and oranges just for you. Pasa, pasa, dice el lobo en la voz de la abuela. Come in, come in, says the wolf in the voice of the grandmother. La niña entra en la casa y el lobo se cubre con la ropa de la cama. Little girl comes into the house and the wolf covers himself with the bedclothes. Buenos días, Caperucita, dice el lobo. Aquí está la cesta de comida, dice Caperucita Roja. Here's the basket of food, says Little Red Riding Hood. Muchas gracias, dice el lobo. Thank you, said the wolf. Ay, abuelita, dice la niña. Está usted muy enferma. Oh, grandmother, said the little girl, you are very sick. Sí, niña, dice el lobo. Abuelita, ¿por qué tiene usted los ojos tan grandes? Grandmother, why are your eyes so big? Ah, para ver a mi niña, dice el lobo en la voz de la abuela. Oh, to see my little girl, says the wolf in the voice of the grandmother. Abuelita, ¿por qué tiene usted las orejas tan grandes? Grandmother, why are your ears so big? Ah, para oír a mi niña, dice el lobo en la voz de la abuela. Oh, to hear my little girl, said the lobo, the wolf in the voice of the grandmother. Abuelita, ¿por qué tiene usted los dientes tan grandes? Grandmother, why are your teeth so big? Ah, para comer a mi niña, dice el lobo. In order to eat my little girl, said the wolf. Ay, ay, usted es el lobo. Tengo mucho miedo. Socorro, socorro, dice la niña. Ah, you are the wolf. I am so afraid. Help, help, says the little girl. En ese momento, la abuela vuelve del bosque con el padre de la niña y su perro. In that moment, the grandmother returned from the woods with the little girl's father and her dog. La niña dice, mi perrito, socorro, socorro, mi perrito. She calls, my dog, help, help, my little dog. El padre entra a la casa con su perro. The father comes into the house with the dog. Socorro, dice el lobo, es un perro, socorro, help. Says the wolf, it's a dog, help! El lobo corre por el bosque y nunca, nunca, nunca vuelve a la casa de la abuelita. The wolf ran into the forest and never, never, never returned to the grandmother's house again.
Bravo. Bravissimo.
That's Italian, but okay.
How do you say bravo in
bravo.
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 Spanish.
Yeah, see.
So I'm able to congratulate you in three languages.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Thanks for your tolerance and patience.
That was good. And that's the kind of, that's the version of Little Red Riding Hood that you could tell to little kids.
That's right. You don't.
It's good.
The wolf does not eat the grandmother, and the wolf does not explode into little smithereens.
Right. And in the original, he not only eats the grandmother, he also eats Red Riding Hood.
That's right. They have to cut him open.
The woodsman comes in and cuts him open, and the two women pop out of his insides. And
delightful. Okay.
And that's a great story with a moral.
Yes, and it has an alter ego. Well, the wolf has an alter ego, or grandmother has an alter ego, either way.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say, so our listeners know, that they are listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. And today is Monday, October 14th, and our theme today is alter egos. And I bet you want to talk about speak.
I'm going to say something about speak, and I'm going to say something, first of all, about an event this week which will feature the man who started this Speak Story series, and it's in its seventh year.
Oh, yes.
Adam Booth, nationally known storyteller, one of the best storytellers in the country, is the man who started Speak Story series. And coming up in the Speak Story series, well, actually, let me just flash back. Going back to this past Tuesday, Tim Tingle was here, an Oklahoma Choctaw Native American who did just some wonderful stories at the Speak event on Tuesday, October the 8th. And I had the privilege of taking him around Tuesday morning to Ranson Elementary in Ranson, West Virginia, where he told stories to the kindergarten, first and second grades as a group, and then 10 minutes later told stories to the third, fourth, and fifth graders as a group. And it was such a great kind of learning experience for me, because I like taking the storytellers when they do the outreach into the community, because I get to hear lots of stories. And Tim was wonderful with the young folks. He got them so excited a number of times that I kept watching the teachers, who, by the way, were very good at, they all stayed, all the teachers stayed in the auditorium. And they sort of lined up on each side, had the children sitting on the floor in rows. And at the end of each row, there was a teacher on both sides. So, and the teachers were very good, but Tim didn't need any help. There was no discipline problem. He did get the kids so wound up a number of times. And he would say, say that with me, say that with me. And it was some outlandish things, you know, real loud yelling and stuff. But then he would settle them down very nicely. He would use his hands and make a motion for them to relax and say, now, back to the story, or something like that. And so it was a great experience for me to see a master storyteller with young children. And he was wonderful that Tuesday night with his tales that he told to an adult audience. But this Saturday night, Adam Booth, Saturday daytime, excuse me, not Saturday night, Adam Booth will be appearing, sponsored by the Antietam Storytelling Guild. He will be appearing at the Hagerstown Library at 100 South Potomac Street in Hagerstown, Maryland. The performance will begin at 2 p.m. And it is a free performance, open to the public, and family entertainment. So grab everybody you know and come to Hagerstown Library. Come early. Because I hope there's going to be a very large crowd. Adam is the dynamite storyteller.
I will be there for sure.
I will be there too. Okay. And then, coming up in the Speak Story series, on November 12th, one of a favorite performer throughout the country, Bill Harley. He's won 2 Grammys. He's a wonderful storyteller, singer, songwriter. He often tells stories while he has his guitar in hands and sings some really nice songs to go along with the story. And sometimes the stories are in the song. So that's at 7:30 on November 12th, Bill Harley. And on October 19th, this Saturday, 2 p.m. at the Hagerstown Library.
Whew. Both of those are on my calendar.
Good.
Thank you, Stosh.
And mine also.
So you're going to tell a story.
Well, once you told me the theme for this week's show, I just for fun, I took out my resume from theater, and I decided to write down all the characters I have played on the stage, starting in 1985, and I have played 51 different male characters. I've never portrayed a female on stage. One of my hopes is that someday I'll be able to do the Yenta in Fiddler on the Roof, because and I'd be willing to shave for that one. Because I think
I should could, think so.
I think I could. Well, you know, some Yentas have a mustache, but I have a beard and a mustache. So, but anyway, that the idea of playing that role is just wonderful. There's a couple of nice singing moments for her, and she's the matchmaker. So I've realized after being in that show twice and playing Laser Wolf, the butcher, that the days are gone when I could even audition to play Tevye. I'm too long in the tooth for that now.
But not too long in the tooth to play Yenta?
Oh, no, the Yenta can be old, old, old. Tevye can't be, well, could be my age, I guess, but I don't have the...
You're speaking of a different Yenta. I was thinking of the one that Barbara Streisand portrayed in the movie.
No, that's Yentl.
That's Yentl, that's right.
Okay. Where she was a man. She played a young...
She did, but
young. Student.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she was very young. No, the Yenta in Fiddler on a Roof is a little old lady who gets in everybody's way and messes with their life. But she's a matchmaker, so she has lots of power. And
you might keep your beard for that.
Yeah, maybe I could wear a high collar or something. Anyway... but here, I'm going to do my best to tell a short version of one of my most favorite stories, written by Miguel de Cervantes. There was a man by the name of Alonso Quijana who read and read and read. He was an old man. And he read so much that eventually he lost control of his mind. And he got this idea deep in his brain that he should go out and right all the wrongs in the world. And so he became an alter ego named Don Quixote de la Mancha. And securing help from a neighbor, one Sancho Panza, they set out on a quest. And in that quest, he went to challenge all the wrongs that he thought of in the world. In his travels, when he first came to a field of windmills, he thought they were giants that were invading the land. And so, with his trusty steed and Sancho, his assistant at his side, and carrying a rather weird-looking, rusty old lance, he charged the windmill. Of course, it being a windmill and the vanes turning because of the air going through it, when he got close enough to hit it with the lance, he was knocked from his horse, but undismayed, picked himself up and decided to continue his quest. And throughout this quest, one of the main things that he did was he went to a place which he thought was a castle, but it turned out to be a gathering place, an inn on a kind of country road, where muleteers were staying, taking a break from their job. They would stay over for a couple of days before they moved on. In his, I guess dementia would be the correct term now, he asked if he can see the master of the castle. And, of course, who comes to meet him is the man who runs the inn. And the man who runs the inn is such a nice, polite person and realizes that the old man is not having a grip on reality. He welcomes him to the castle and decides to sit him down at the table and give him some food and tells him he can stay. And Sancho watches all of this nearby. He worries about the old man all the time. Well, the muleteers are a rough bunch of men, and there is a woman in the castle. Her name is Aldonza. That's what Don Quixote calls her, Aldonza. And he sees her as the maiden who he worships. He actually professes his love for her, and she is just a kitchen maid, and actually a woman of ill repute, for a certain amount of money she will lie down with one of the muleteers or anyone who has the right amount of money. As the story goes on, Don Quixote professes his love for her. She calls him a fool and says that, tells him that he what he sees isn't reality, and that he should wake up and see the truth. Well, the muleteers, of course, mistreat Aldonza, and Don Quixote gets in a fight with the muleteers and actually defeats one of the muleteers, and others are scared of him because he is an outrageous warrior. He fears nothing and manages to do some damage to them. The man in charge of the inn, whom Don Quixote thinks is the leader of the king of the castle, tells him that the old man, that he should rest, and he says, no, tomorrow I will be knighted, and I will pass this evening and the night in prayer. And so he does. He stays in the garden and prays all night. In the morning, he finds out that the muleteers have stolen Aldonza and ridden off. And so he goes after them and defeats them in battle and brings Aldonza back to the castle. He asks the innkeeper, who he thinks is the king, if he will knight him. And so there is a ceremony, which the innkeeper goes along with, and he is knighted. And there's a celebration, and during that celebration, the old man collapses. Of course, he is taken back to his home, and he's very ill and lying on his deathbed. And who shows up at the door but Aldonza, who has heard how ill he is and comes to see him. And the old man has realized who he really is, Alonzo Quijana. And in this wonderful scene, Aldonza tells him that he is Don Quixote de la Mancha, the man who rights all wrongs and who is her love. And it sparks in the old man a memory of his quest, and he gets out of his deathbed and begins to join Aldonza and Sancho, who has been sitting with him, in a celebration, but dies from the turmoil and exhaustion in his old age. I love that story.
And you tell it so well.
Well, one of my favorite theatrical pieces is Man of La Mancha. And the first time I auditioned for a theatrical production in 1985, I was cast as one of the muleteers, not one of the bad ones. and I got to sing a solo, and it was the beginning of an incredible time in my life. For over 30 years now, I have been performing in theatrical productions, and I've been in Man of La Mancha, and I have actually directed it also. And it is truly a wonderful, wonderful story. And it's actually just an excerpt from the book written by Miguel de Cervantes, because the book is much longer than that story. And that's only one small piece of the Don Quixote legend. So.
Lovely.
Good. Well, I'm glad you like that. I've never told that before.
Well, I'm glad we talked about alter egos.
Yeah.
Since you were going to perform a traditional Spanish story.
Yeah. Too bad I don't know any Spanish.
It's probably just as well.
Yeah. And the stage performance, the musical that is written based on that that part of the book, is just a wonderful, wonderful kind of break from reality, because it is based on something that happened to Cervantes. He was a traveling person and told stories and did sort of little shows and stuff. And in the stage version of this, he is thrown in jail. And so the place he is in jail, actually. He's in a prison. And the prisoners take his manuscript. And they're wondering what it is, and they're going to burn it. And he says, no, 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 that's my life's work. And he says, they argue with him, oh, what good is it? And he says, it's a story. Listen, come with me. Enter into my imagination. And in the stage show, it's done really wonderful. Whoever plays the lead in that show, who plays Cervantes, plays the old man, Alonzo Quijana, and plays the knight, Don Quixote, kneels in the center of the stage, takes out a makeup kit, and changes from Cervantes into the old man, puts makeup on, grays his hair and things, and as the old man, he finishes with the makeup and tells a story how the old man has lost his grip on reality and now has become Don Quixote de la Mancha. And the entire musical is played out in the prison. And it's just truly a wonderful experience.
I've never seen the play, so I'm going to have to...
Oh, you should see it.
Yeah, it is clearly.
It is just absolutely wonderful.
Okay.
And a bit sad, but...
Well, I certainly knew the sad part. I've heard pieces of the story told, but not... Yeah,
and it's uplifting. It's uplifting in the but a lot of musicals, I've over the years, I've met people who just love certain musicals. For instance, Camelot. If you say Camelot, and you offer somebody, Camelot's being played at the in Weinberg, you know, and you said, I'll give you tickets for it, you know, and they would be, oh, thank you, oh, lovely, wonderful. People have this great idea about Camelot that's so uplifting and all, because most of the time people think of the fun in it, and of course Lancelot who sings If Ever I Would Leave You, and this, and just wonderful, wonderful characters, but it ends in tragedy.
Yeah.
And it ends actually with an uplifting message, you know. But the tragedy is a real downer, you know. But I like it. That's one of my favorites. Go ahead.
Can I tell another story?
Of course.
Okay.
Is this in Spanish?
No, it's not in Spanish. It's a personal story. When we talked about alter egos, what came to me was Halloween, of course, and costumes and becoming somebody else for Halloween. So Halloween costumes were important to me in my youth. In 1955, my mother made me a costume from her old pale filmy blue nightgown and a wand made of bent wire coat hanger with a cardboard star at one end, all wrapped up in aluminum foil. I only remember looking at the pictures, the photographs of that evening, and I remember asking her, what am I supposed to be? She said, the blue fairy from Pinocchio. That's who you said you wanted to be. Well, I have no memory of that reported obsession or even of the costume itself. I just have that photograph. In 1956, my mother made me a witch's outfit from her old black crepe party dress, complete with a broad-brimmed, cone-shaped black hat and a black half-mask. And there's a photo of this one, too. I'm standing in front of the refrigerator next to my friend Harriet, who's 3 years older than me, and I'm staring at Harriet in fascination because she's wearing a plastic Bugs Bunny mask and store-bought bunny-footed costume. And I remember wondering what it would feel like to pretend to be Bugs Bunny. But I don't remember wondering about pretending to be a witch. 1957, I answered the door on Halloween night to find on our doorstep not one but two flying purple people eaters, one-eyed, one-horned flying purple people eaters. They were grown-ups wearing purple tights and dance-skin ballet leotard tops with purple ballet shoes, and they had some kind of purple hoodies that completely covered their hair. Now, the one who knocked on the door was clearly male. He did have on tights, so I could tell that. And behind him was his very buxom mate, but I had no idea who they were. After a moment of stunned, open-mouthed bewilderment, while they sang, one horn, one-eyed, flying purple people. I don't remember the tune, but my mother came to the door and correctly identified these two freaks as friends of the family, Bob and MJ Stefanos. Now, I knew the song from the radio, and their costumes were funny, but I don't remember
imagining myself as a purple people eater. Halloween 1958, Fidel Castro knocked on our front door, and when I opened it, he yelled, "Trick or treat!" with a Spanish accent and a menacing Cuban cigar. I had a fit of giggling, but I was a little panicked. I knew who Fidel Castro was. I'd seen his photograph on magazines. I was pretty sure he would not have come calling on Halloween night. But I didn't recognize the friend beneath the wig and the military work cap, even though his wife was right behind him in a long flamboyant embroidered skirt and peasant blouse. I left the door open and bolted for the rear of our apartment, yelling, "Mom!" And she came running, met me halfway. She could see Fidel from the hallway, where she burst out laughing. It was my parents' friends, Mickey and Marion. My imagination would take me only as far as imagining what it would be like if the real Fidel had shown up at our door. Well, fast forward to Halloween 1966. I was a rock star that year, wearing tight white jeans, a purple shirt with blotchy red and blue pattern all over it, and my hair greased into an Elvis pompadour, complete with a long curl falling into my eyes. My friends were much more impressed. My high school friends were much more impressed with the 70 young people that showed up for my first Halloween party in response to my word of mouth marketing for this party. And they all crowded into the empty first floor apartment. My parents let me take over for the evening. And then they were much more impressed with all of that than they were with my costume or the chips, pretzels, tiny sandwiches, and my measly record collection. My costume was not that different than my everyday clothes, and I kept forgetting to stay in character. My next Halloween memory is dyeing an old green sheet, rubbing green food coloring all over my body, and wrapping the dyed sheet around me like a toga so I could be the Statue of Liberty, carrying a fat volume of the Encyclopedia Britannica cradled in my left arm and a flashlight torch over my head in my raised right hand. It took days to get the green off my skin. It stayed between my toes for months. And the Statue of Liberty was not a character I could really emote or act out once the torch was raised. The next year, I was Lady Bountiful, or the good food goddess with vegetable earrings and a necklace of shiny clay beads with shaped like bananas and apples and peaches and cabbages. I was wearing a bright yellow puffy sleeve blouse and a long green skirt, carrying a cornucopia basket filled with fruits and vegetables and a shield slung around my neck that was decorated with the four food groups. You remember the four food groups: protein, dairy, grains, and fruits and vegetables. I spent the evening offering to trade my basket of vegetables for Halloween candy corn and Hershey Kisses. In 1976, my husband rented a tuxedo for Halloween so he could become a famous Italian film director while I put on a gauzy 1930s chemise, a clip-on red rose earring on my left nostril, lots of blue eyeshadow and eyeliner, round pink-lensed glasses, and a lovely pout as his starlet girlfriend. Well, that was fun. I could be silly and rude all evening, putting on airs and practicing slurring my words without drinking a thing, but carrying a wine glass of grape juice around all evening. And after that, Halloween 1977, maybe, I arranged my hair in 20 or 30 small corkscrew braids, rubbed dark blue dye on my hands, arms, and feet, wrapped myself in 3 yards of dark blue sheeting, draped another few yards over my head and face, adorned myself with as many gold chains, bracelets, amulets, and earrings as I could beg and borrow, laced on the primitive sandals that I made myself as an apprentice in a Philadelphia leather shop in 1964. And I told everyone I was a nomadic Tuareg woman fleeing her husband's caravan.
in the Far East, Middle East. But what I wanted to tell you about today was the alter ego that I created to impersonate a grandma at a Halloween party in 1991. First, I took myself to my favorite Goodwill thrift store and found a pair of stretch pants in a bold white and purple large plaid and a lavender sweater made from a petroleum product, probably extruded petroleum product. Before I put them on at home on Halloween evening, I wrapped my torso with 8 folded bath towels, expanding my figure by a good 6 inches in each direction. And under the sweater, in each cup of my oversized long line bra, were stuffed 3 pairs of socks folded and rolled for maximum lift. 12 hand towels expanded the diameter of my thighs. I dusted my hair with spray-on gray hair color, stretched a shiny black hairnet on my head to anchor and press my hair flat, and then sprayed my head with Superhold Aquanet hairspray for the intoxicating aroma that mingled nicely with my sweet violet's eau de toilette. Hanging from my neck, a strand of 2-inch diameter pearl-like beads, and from my ears, clip-on 4-inch by 1-inch pearlized earrings that were the shape of stubby, blunted bear claws, but bear claws painted with frosted pink nail polish. I carried a black patent leather, oversized purse on one arm, just like the one I remember my own grandma carrying. And inside this one were 10 16-ounce Charlie Brown candy bars marked at $3 each. I asked each person I conversed with that evening if they would be interested in purchasing a candy bar to, one, help my grandchildren win a prize for most candy sold that week, and two, help buy new books for their school library. All that evening, I circulated through the party and between chocolate bar sales, pretended to drink whiskey sours. My husband took a Kodachrome photo of me in my grandma outfit that I mailed to my mother after the fact, telling her that I put on a few pounds Halloween weekend. Of course, she was a grandma herself for nearly 20 years by that time, so I had a small twinge of conscience, wondering if she might be offended. But I needn't have worried. She sent me back a short note saying, and I quote, "Thanks for the photo, dear. Those plaid pants are not very flattering on you, but I don't understand why this is a costume. Did you get your hair cut? It seems shorter than usual. Are those new earrings? I don't remember seeing them before. Interesting shape. And what did you mean about 8 bath towels? Shall I ship some bath towels to you? Or you could just pick them up at Thanksgiving. It was good to hear from you, dear." That was my very last Halloween costume.
Very good. Well, I think we've run out of time.
I think we have.
And so, are you going to close us out or shut out?
I think you should close us out.
Okay. This is Stasi Olkowski and
Fanny Crawford,
your co-hosts for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. Independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia.
Forgot to tell them about talltales.enlightenedradio.org.
Okay, go ahead.
If you want to hear more stories, you can listen to our podcasts at talltales.enlightenedradio.org.
And you'll find lots of them there. And some of them are entertaining. Hopefully all of them are in some way. So the Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for
Live Jazz.
Live Jazz. Whoa.
Bye.